I'm Mark Purcell, and this is the Sunday edition of Cincinnati Edition. Jackson Landers, author of the new book Eating Aliens, talks with Thane Maynard about tracking down and eating invasive species.
Jackson Landers, welcome to the show. I'll tell you what, your book Eating Aliens is really something.
Well, thank you very much, Thane.
Now, I know you've had some adventures. I've enjoyed reading this book. I've also eaten some of the animals that you have in here, so I know that it's doable, but give a little background on what in the world led you to start to say, okay, Asian carp are a problem, let's eat some of them as an example.
Before I started working on this project, my first book was A Beginner's Guide to Hunting Deer for Food, and I'd been teaching classes. I'd been teaching adult beginners how to hunt for food because I see that as a critical component of the local food movement. And as I wrapped up work on that book, I started looking around for what are other positive things that I can do for the environments with hunting. I wanted to look at new ways to leverage my skills as a hunter and a fisherman, you know, to really do something that was definitely positive. And, you know, I thought that what I wanted to try to stop was extinction. That's really my bedrock value in terms of wildlife and conservation policies. I want to stop extinctions. And I saw three things happening that around the world that tend to lead to extinctions right now. We have a lot of them going on. And that was global warming was one. Mm-hmm. And the second is loss of habitat. And I see lots of different groups and people doing something about those problems and really being active on them. They're good organizations doing work in those. But the third thing was the impact of invasive species. And when I looked around, I didn't see a lot of people doing much about that. And I thought, well, I'm a teacher, I'm a writer, I'm a hunter. I can put these skills together and maybe make a difference.
Absolutely. And, of course, the great part about it is, as you said, you're a teacher. By making people aware of it, particularly in a creative way, as you've done with your book, sort of begins that dialogue where I would bet that even 95% of the people listening aren't quite aware that invasive species are a problem for native species, which they are all over the world.
That's right.
But making it sort of fun and offbeat and interesting is something. Now, tell us a bit about some of your unusual encounters of some of these aliens that you eat and if it's tough to catch them or the whole darn story.
Sometimes it's really tough to catch them, and sometimes it turns out to be really, really easy. You know, the funny thing that I found when I started working on this book was that, you know, there's not a playbook for going after most of these things. If you decide you want to go out and hunt wild turkey or you want to fish for largemouth bass, you can pick up a magazine or a book, and you can read all about how to do that. It's all been figured out. A lot of these species, they've been around not for very long in the U.S. We don't really have a system for hunting with them, and it's kind of, you know, it's all new. So, for example, when I went to Florida to hunt black spiny tail iguanas in residential areas where you can't go discharging a high-powered rifle, you know, it was learning how to hunt all over again, learning a whole new set of tactics. On the other hand, when I went after silver carp along the Missouri, on tributaries of the Missouri River, they literally jumped right into the boat. It was amazing. I didn't really have to do anything except get myself out there. So sometimes it's easy, sometimes it's simple. I think one of the most dramatic things to look at and think, wow, I'm really going to turn this into food, was one of the first species, the very first one in the book is the black spiny tail iguana, which is found around the island of Boca Grande, or Gasparilla Island on the Gulf Coast of Florida. You know, they look like tiny little dinosaurs, but they taste like chicken with a texture like crab.
There you go. In fact, I've eaten iguana, and I know just what you're saying. In fact, I've been on Boca Grande, and they are, by God, all over everywhere down there. You know, the one that you might be able to help with, and as you've implied in the book, help feed the hungry, is take a bunch of people from Dade County out to the Everglades and catch some of those pythons, because, man, there's a lot of meat on the ground there.
Yeah, you know, it's. I had originally planned to do a chapter in Eating Aliens about the Everglades pythons, and I got down there, and what I found on the ground is that I ended up deciding not to do the chapter because I didn't think it would be very honest in the sense that they will tell you in that national park that they have a season on pythons, but in practice they have so many rules for hunting them that in most of the seasons they've had so far, nobody gets a single one. You can't just go out and shoot it. You know, you can't just you have to capture them live and bring them back, and there's certain areas you can go into and other areas you can't. They have so many rules that it's not practical. They've set hunters up for failure there. They've decided not to solve the problem in the Everglades, and I thought that to even cooperate in that, it's sort of a farce of a system. I ended up not including that. So, yeah, there are, I think pythons probably would make a pretty good meal. There's a lot of meat on them, but in practice, they're not going to let anyone do what they need to do to get them out of there. I think that problem is probably intractable.
I'll tell you what, that's a shame because I grew up in the state of Florida, and I know that both in the Everglades as well as the Northern Keys, in addition to being the nuisance that they're famous for, they're actually killing off some endangered species that are not equipped at all to survive predators like that.
Extinctions will result there, absolutely.
Yeah, no kidding. Now, the interesting thing is you've done two or three things with this book and with your efforts. The one is the educational side of it about alien species and the challenges. Another is the fun sort of adventure side of it.
That's right.
But you actually do eat these darn things. So, as you said, some are very palatable. I've had iguana. I've had armadillo in South America when I was in Suriname years ago, in the middle of gosh knows where. Some of these must be less palatable.
You know, the funny thing is, that's what I went into this thinking. I went into this when I decided to start this project. I thought I would come across, I knew that some things would be more practical than others to be commercially harvested, and some may or may not make sense for, you know, just a group of local people to do it, you know, for themselves. I thought that I would also run into situations where something just tasted disgusting. And the surprising thing is, everything tasted fine once I looked for the right way to cook it. Mm-hmm. You know, if you try to cook everything like a meat that you know, you're going to end up with things that don't work very well. Like, for example, if you handle silver carp the way that a lot of fishermen would handle a bass or catfish, it's going to taste horrible. You really have to clean it right away. You can't throw it in the bottom of the boat and wait a couple hours to process it. But once I started paying attention to little things like that, everything tasted good. The one exception for me, and there wasn't anything really wrong with the meat per se, but I found I went after nine-banded armadillos, which are invasive in North America, mm-hmm. north of the Rio Grande. On a couple different occasions, I hunted them on foot with a knife, actually, just running them down in Georgia and in Texas. The meat itself was somewhere between chicken and pork. The problem was there was a certain smell that an armadillo has when it's fresh and before it's been skinned and everything. There's a certain armadillo smell that I kept thinking about after I'd butchered it. It just the meat didn't even smell like that, but I kept thinking about that weird funky armadillo smell when I was eating it, and it's just one of those psychological things. I'd rather not eat it again. But if somebody hadn't been the person to hunt it, maybe they'd be okay. Or if they weren't the person to butcher it. I'd rather not eat armadillo again. Everything else is pretty good.
And, you know, to point out the points that you also mention in your book, you know, invasive species really are a major environmental problem all across the world and certainly all across the U.S. I know the legendary and iconic Yellowstone Lake, their cutthroats are nearly eaten out of house and home by lake trout that were put in there illegally. And, man, you put in an aggressive predator, it'll knock out all the others.
That's right. That's right. Every time. It's the same situation you have with the the snakes in Florida. You put in a new top-level predator, and you're usually going to be in a lot of trouble. The ones that cause the most trouble, I think, are the invasive species that are at the very top of the food chain and the ones that are at the very bottom. You know, those two tend to do the most damage, I've found.
Absolutely. Now, briefly on Asian carp, because there's been a lot of discussion here in our area as they've started to be seen, whether it's in the Great Lakes or in the rivers. What's to be done about Asian carp?
I think that there's been too much focus and too much money spent on, and I know this is going to be controversial to say, there's been too much money being spent on keeping them out of the Great Lakes, and there's basically nothing being spent on eradication. You know, I think that most of these efforts at keeping them out of the Great Lakes are—it's just slowing things down. It's only a matter of time before someone who didn't get the memo is going to is going to have some that he netted as live bait and goes from one waterway to another, and that's going to happen sooner or later. You're going to get them moved around by people doing things like that, just hopping them, 15 miles around somewhere as he takes his boat from one waterway to another, and all the technology you can put at the mouth of the Illinois River is not going to stop that. And I also don't think they're going to do very well in the Great Lakes. This is a species that depends on long stretches of flowing rivers in order to spawn. The danger is in the rivers. You know, in the lakes, I guess the adults can hang out there, but they can't breed there. We need to focus on eradication. I think we've spent too much money and too much time studying this fish, and there is some good research being done. There is some practical research being done, but it's time to stop this sort of pie-in-the-sky stuff in terms of this hormones and things we're going to dump in the water that maybe we're going to hope are going to kill the carp and not kill anything else. We have a way of taking fish out of the water, and we've been doing it for thousands of years. You have a couple people in a boat with a net. But we're very good at removing fish like that, and I don't understand why we have all these government programs that are trying to reinvent the wheel when we've spent all this money on research. It's time to move ahead to eradication instead of just blocking their movement.
Everybody's heard of herbivores and carnivores, but Jackson Landers, you have introduced a term to me I did not know, which is invasivores.
That's right. Jim Gorman from the New York Times invented that. He wrote an article about my work, and I cannot take credit for the term. That was his, but I've definitely used it.
Heck yeah. Well, it's a great one, and this has been fun. So thanks for spending a few minutes with us.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me, Thane.
My guest has been Jackson Landers, author of the new book, Eating Aliens. For Cincinnati Edition, I'm Thane Maynard.